Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun, Midweek Market Outlook. I am Peter Schiff, hosting the show in person, live. From my house in Weston, Connecticut. I do the show, we do the show every Wednesday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. This show can be heard on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz. We also have a link to the show on my Europac website, europac.net. Also, we maintain the archives there for people who miss the live episodes or who want to tell friends about a particular episode. They can go up to the Europac.net site, go to the weekly radio broadcast, and click on the archives and listen to the prior shows. All of the old shows, going back to the first one, which I think was in 2004, all those shows are there. And I encourage people for kicks to go back and listen to the earlier shows to hear what I was saying way back then, and you know, compare what I was predicting to what has actually occurred. Anyway, the number to call to ask me a question, make a comment, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Anyway, a little news, 7922. Also, we did put to bed, finally, my new book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. I worked on that book together with my brother, Andrew Schiff, who has hosted this show from time to time and who works out of the New York office. You can already pre-order that book. It's up on Amazon.com right now, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. I don't know if we have it up on my recommended reading list yet. Yeah, I don't. You might want to wait for that. That way I can get credit for it. I get paid, I don't know how much I get on those books, maybe 10 cents or 50 cents a book. But yeah, we will put it shortly on the Euro Pacific Capital website. I have a recommended reading list site there, and of course I have my books as well as several others. So I'll go and add How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. So why not wait about a week and then go to the Europac site and order it on Amazon through Europac, and then, you know, I'll get the credit through it through my Amazon account. It's not much, but I guess everything helps. Why give the money away? But I think that's going to be a really good book. It's based on a book my dad wrote a long time ago. We really updated it. I think it's a great book. I think it's on Amazon. It's going to sell for about $13. I think the cover price is maybe $17 or $18, but on Amazon it's $13. And I think it's going to be great. Hopefully we sell a lot of copies. Hopefully a lot of you buy several copies and give them away to your friends. You know, it's really going to help educate Americans on economics and to get people to understand the nature of this crisis and what's really going on. You know, we got economic data out today, ADP. Everybody was thinking, oh, we're going to create all these jobs. And the jobs number comes out on Friday. And the ADP number took the wind out of everybody's sails because we lost 20,000 jobs. You know, Wall Street really believes that there's a recovery. You know, there is no recovery. There's no recovery now. There's no recovery coming. Recovery is impossible given the massive expansion of the U.S. federal government. The government is now so enormous that it's impossible for the economy to grow because the government is sucking all the life out of it. You know, whatever resources the economy needs to grow are being taken away by the federal government. That's what's growing. You know, first we had a NASDAQ bubble, and then we had a housing bubble, and now we have a government bubble. And, you know, this government bubble is not going to even create phony economic growth like the other bubbles. And I'm sure it's not going to be nearly as fun. You know, at least people had fun during the stock market bubble or the housing bubble. you know, the only people who are going to enjoy the government bubble are the people who work for the government. And unfortunately, they're becoming more numerous every day. Of course, many of the people on Wall Street will enjoy the government bubble because they're participating. They're getting all the bailout money. They're getting all the subsidies. So there are a handful of people that are going to profit from the government bubble. But the overwhelming majority of Americans and the American economy is going to suffer dramatically from the government bubble. And, of course, when this government bubble bursts, look out. There are no bailouts coming. You know, the U.S. government can't be bailed out. It's too big, you know. So, but when we keep getting this economic data, you know, it doesn't surprise me that we keep getting weak economic data. You know, look at the spending numbers that just came out. I think it was just last week, where our spending was up, but because our savings hit a new post-financial crisis low at 3.1%. The savings rate is dropping almost as fast, I guess, or faster than Barack Obama's approval ratings. This is not a good sign. We need more savings. We can't go in deeper into debt. We're in too much debt right now. Now, I don't know if I mentioned on this show before, but I read that I think 43% or 45% of Americans have less than $10,000 saved for retirement. I mean, if you have less than $10,000, you haven't saved for retirement. You're not going to retire, especially when all the inflation is coming. $10,000, you know, who knows what that's going to be worth. But even if it maintained its value, even if you had $10,000 worth of gold, you might not be able to retire. Although, given how high gold prices I think are going to go, you might have a shot at it, especially if you stay here in America, because I think wages are going to fall dramatically, so that gold might go an awfully far way. But the point is, Americans aren't saving enough. We need to save, like maniacs in this country. That's what we need. But of course, Wall Street doesn't want that. The government doesn't want that. They want us going deeper into debt so we can keep spending. And they pretend that the spending is economic growth when it's not. The spending is not how we grow the economy, but how we impoverish the economy. And that is exactly what's going on. You know, also, I read that in either the jobs bill or the health, I think it was in the jobs bill, but maybe it was in the health care bill. I can't forget where they shoved this thing in. But I've been warning about capital controls coming. And we got the first step in that direction, where the U.S. government is saying that if you've got a foreign account, a foreign bank account, a foreign brokerage account, and you withdraw money from that account, the entity, the bank or the brokerage firm, is required to take 30% of whatever you withdraw out of your money and send it to the U.S. government. How about that? And they've also said that if an American citizen opens up a foreign account, that foreign bank must reveal to the U.S. government all of the pertinent information about that individual, his name, address, you know, all that stuff. And the law says that if the country's banking laws prohibit those disclosures, like Switzerland, then the bank must close the account and send the money back. In other words, this law makes it illegal for Americans to have a secret offshore account. It's illegal, right? You open an account as an American citizen in Switzerland or, you know, any of these other countries, unless your name is identified. You can still have an account there, but all the information has to be given to the government. And apparently, if you take any money out, they need to send it to the U.S. government to make sure that they get the right amount of taxes. So this is, you know, a terrible piece of legislation limiting the rights of American citizens, but it shows you where the government is going. This is just the first step. And, of course, no one even voted on this thing. No, there's no debate on it. They just slip it in to another bill. So this is why I'm saying capital controls are coming. It's going to get worse. I'm confident that eventually what I'm doing with my clients is either going to be illegal or it's going to be uneconomical because the government's going to impose such heavy taxes on buying foreign currencies, buying foreign stocks, buying precious metals that nobody will be able to do it. So I think you got to understand, read the writing on the wall and take action. I think it's important to get your money out of the dollar now, you know, while it's still legal to do it, while there aren't any taxes. And obviously, you know, the way the laws are written now, you know, you got to do it in a domestic account, which is fortunately, what I'm doing. I mean, when you send your money to Euro Pacific Capital, even though the money is invested in foreign securities, the money stays in America. The account stays in America. So, of course, brokerage accounts with Euro Pacific Capital are not affected by this capital control. I think eventually there will be legislation passed that will affect customers at Euro Pacific Capital. And, you know, I'm hoping that that day is, you know, is as far away as possible, because that gives me more time to protect the wealth of as many Americans as I can before the government slams the door shut. Because the government doesn't want anybody escaping the inflation tax. They want us paying the inflation tax. If we start getting rid of the dollar, you know, then we pull the rug out from under them. So when they start to see more and more Americans doing what my clients are already doing, that's when they're going to try to stop it. That's where they're going to put the legislation in to bring an end to it. So in the meantime, you know, the coast is still clear, because not that many Americans have figured out what we already know. So the key is to act, and to act quickly. So again, you know, if you still got a lot of cash that's just sitting on the sidelines, don't leave it on the sidelines too much longer. You know, talk to your Euro Pacific Capital broker about the things that we can do to protect and secure the purchasing power of those funds at 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. And speaking about purchasing power, I know I've talked about Euro Pacific Precious Metals ad nauseum. It's still not up and running, but we now have, I think, 6 or 7 employees at Euro Pacific Precious Metals. So we are quietly building up that company. We are just not quite ready to open the doors yet to our first customer. But I promise you, we are getting closer and closer. In the meantime, we continue to recommend and sell precious metals to our clients through the Perth Mint program. You can get information about the Perth Mint program by calling up Euro Pacific Capital. Any of the brokers who you're working with can get you information and help you purchase gold, silver, and platinum and have it stored in Perth in Australia. Or if you don't have an account yet, you can call directly at 800-993-8350, 800-993-8350. Get information on the Perth Mint. All that stuff, of course, all the numbers for Europac and the Perth Mint are on the website at europac.net. Anyway, before I start taking your calls, I thought I'd, you know, give you a little bit more update on my Senate race. Today is the last day of the fundraising quarter, and so we have until midnight tonight to bring some more money into the campaign. So I've been making some calls and sending out some emails trying to raise some money this quarter. I know some of my opponents are feeling some pressure to try to raise money. And so if you haven't donated to the campaign, or you have, this is a great time to donate some more at shiftforsenate.com. In fact, you know, we have that donation tracker on the site. For a while, it wasn't working properly, but now it is all working. We got all the bugs out of it finally. So anyone who donates, within a couple of minutes, you know, your name is up there, your donation is registered. Right now, we're at just under $1,900,000 in total money raised since day one. You know, we're at $1,897,182. So it'd be great if we can, you know, get more donations. Anybody listening live to this show can obviously donate. I'm going to kind of keep an eye on it and see how it's doing during the net course of this hour. It'd be great to see that ticker really surge above 1.9. I had a goal. I really wanted to get to 2 million before midnight tonight. Looks like it's going to be difficult to get that high number, but you never know. It's still 5:15 out there on the West Coast, so we still have people out there on the West Coast to really pull me over, and hopefully a lot more people will get home tonight, see my emails, and really, you know, donate, because it still looks like we need to raise almost $100,000. I'm sure there's some offline donations, so we're probably a little closer than that, but it'd be great if we could make that goal by midnight tonight. So I'll be to watch the donations as we proceed with the rest of the show and I start taking your phone calls. Anyway, let me go to the phones. First up is going to be Eric in Nevada. Go ahead, Eric.
Hello?
Hi, Eric. You're on the line with Peter.
Hey, what's up, man? Dude, we're big fans, man. But hey, I'll tell you right now, first time ever donating to a political candidate, man.
Well, I appreciate it. A lot of people tell me that I'm the first candidate they've ever donated to, or the first politician. And I say, you know what, you still haven't donated to a politician, because I'm not one. Even though I'm running for office, I'm not a politician. You know, I'm telling the truth, and that automatically means I'm not a politician.
Right on. Anyway, I guess my question is, I was wondering about these the second wave of mortgage defaults that are coming up, you know, the Alt-A's and Option Arms and the commercial real estate and all that stuff. I was looking at the charts for gold and silver in 2008, and everything just, like, dropped. I was wondering, because I thought that would have got the prices going up, or is that from, like, J.P. Morgan shorting it, or how does exactly that work?
Well, I think the reason that precious metals dropped in 2008 along with everything else is because there was still a chance the government would do the right thing in 2008. You know, we didn't know what was going to happen for sure. Banks were failing. You know, the housing market was collapsing. Fannie and Freddie were in danger of going bankrupt. It was possible that the government would have done the right thing and not bailed anybody out. Let banks fail. Let housing prices fall. And so that was going to be bearish for everything. But now we know that the government's – there's no chance of the government doing the right thing. The time to do the right thing is basically passed from their perspective, and they're going to keep printing money. So I don't expect to see a major decline in the price of gold again. I expect to see a major advance in the price of gold. I think that trade of, you know, buy the dollar, buy treasuries, sell gold, sell commodities, I think that's over. I think that was 2008's trade. I think that's a lot of people are expecting that to happen again, and I think they're going to be wrong. You know, that's my my theory. Oh, I might as well take as long as I'm speaking about my forecasts and people being wrong. I might as well throw in my disclaimer now about the fact that this show features my opinions, and everything I say is an opinion. And because it's an opinion, it may not actually happen. My forecast could be completely wrong. My understanding of economics could be completely wrong. My understanding of investments could be wrong. People that make investments based on my opinions could lose all their money. They could just, you know, I could be as wrong as possible. So always bear that in mind, that there are many opinions that contradict mine, including just about everybody in Washington, D.C., everybody who's on the Council of Economic Advisors, most Nobel Prize-winning economists, economists at almost all the banks and investment banks, most market strategists think I'm completely nuts.
Okay, so, can I ask you one more thing?
Anyway, that being said, let's finish with your question.
I also wanted to ask you about last week the CFTC had a meeting with GATA, and I was wondering what's going to actually come out of it. Are they just not going to do anything like they've always done?
I don't know. I've heard about this. Again, GATA is out there talking about manipulation in the precious metals markets. Is there manipulation? Like, I know that governments don't want the gold price to go up, obviously, because mm-hmm. it shows that their currencies are weakening. It's a warning sign. And so they certainly want gold prices to go down. What they're actually doing to bring that about, I mean, foreign central banks have been selling gold for many, many years, although now you have central banks buying gold. And I expect more central banks to be buying gold than selling gold in the years ahead. So I don't know whether or not they're manipulating or not. It's not going to work. The price of gold and silver, in my opinion, will rise and rise sharply. And as far as I'm concerned, the fact that if they are manipulating and keeping it down, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. You know, buy as much of it as you can at these artificially suppressed prices.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we've been doing. But you don't think like anything's going to happen with them bringing it to the public's attention or anything like that? You don't think? I mean,
I don't know. The public.
Is
I don't
it
think the public.
That, like, the comics could crash or anything like that.
No. Well, I mean, what would bankrupt the COMEX would be, and it could happen very easily. Let's say there's a major move in the price of gold in one day. Let's say gold goes up $1,000 an ounce in one day, right? It goes from 1,000, you know, it just goes up. Well, the people who are short gold are going to get wiped out. They're not going to be able to get out of their trades. And so a lot of the people who are short gold contracts might not have the money to meet their margin calls. And if enough people can't meet their margin calls, then the exchange could go bankrupt. Because then the exchange has to do it. And, you know, the same thing could happen. What if a lot of people, you know, and that might be precipitated by a lot of the longs trying to take delivery and forcing the shorts to have to buy metal to deliver it. And, you know, and that can happen in the option market. There are all sorts of things that could happen that could bankrupt counterparties in precious metals trades. There's no question about my mind that could happen. And it might happen.
Well, because I think that's what Ghetto was bringing up with. were accusing J.P. Morgan of doing that when they bought up was it Lehman Brothers, and they bought up all their shorts on the silver market, and that's what they were saying. But I was wondering what you thought about that. Or
yeah, I don't know. Look, I mean, they make. I don't know. I haven't really looked into some of these allegations, but I in general just don't. I tend to dismiss this conspiratorial type theories. Like, I just don't think that you can really pull them off, that you can keep enough the information quiet. I do think that there is a lot of interest in Wall Street in keeping the price of gold down, because obviously that's not what they sell. They sell paper. They don't want. Yeah. They don't like it. But the reality is, gold has gone from $250 an ounce 10 years ago to over $1,100. So if the government is trying to keep the price of gold down, they're obviously not doing a good job.
Yeah.
It's going up. Now, I agree it should be even higher, but it's still going up. Right? They can't keep it down. They might be able to slow the rate of increase for a while, but they're not going to keep it down. Anyway, thanks for the call, Eric.
All right, man. Thanks, bud.
Next up is Jeff in Vancouver.
Hello?
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. The guy before me actually just sort of asked my question regarding gold, but to ask another one regarding gold, you could have paper gold or physical gold. What happens if gold really is leveraged, like up to what they say, possibly 100 to 1?
Well, it is leveraged. I mean, remember, the reason that AIG went bankrupt is because they couldn't cover the losses on the derivative contracts that they were involved in. That was a counterparty. Goldman Sachs was one of their counterparties. Goldman Sachs made bets with AIG, and Goldman won and AIG lost. But AIG couldn't afford to pay Goldman, and so Goldman got the government to bail out AIG so that Goldman can collect on its bet. And of course, if it wasn't for Goldman's bets and the bets that Goldman encouraged AIG to make, AIG wouldn't have failed in the first place. So the same thing might happen to somebody who's long gold. They could win a lot of money because the short is losing it. But if the short goes bankrupt and can't pay, then the long is also going to lose. See, Goldman Sachs would have been, out of luck, SOL, had their buddies not bailed out AIG.
So, yeah.
Now, I don't know. Maybe that's going to happen again, But I don't know that the government is going to bail out the COMEX so it can pay off all the people who are long gold. They might just say, screw them, let them lose their money. I don't know. But that's one of the reasons that I tell people to have physical gold. Own your own gold. Don't own a promise by somebody else to pay you gold. And when you own gold in the Perth Mint, you own your own gold. That is not a derivative contract. You actually own gold, and it's in Australia. But when you own a futures contract, when you own an option on a futures contract, you own the promise that somebody will pay you, deliver to you gold that they don't currently own.
Yeah,
well, what if they
if
can't
they,
do it? So
even if they give you cash, that's also a form of default, too, because you actually bought the physical metal.
Yeah, and of course, if gold prices are skyrocketing and they give you cash, the cash could lose so much value between the time they give it to you and the time you can actually spend it on something. So, yeah, I mean, you got to be very careful, and people need to own physical gold. Hey, I just noticed we popped up about 4,000 or 5,000 in the last few minutes on the campaign site, so now we're well over 1.9 million. So I don't know. Maybe it's some of you guys listening to the show that are donating. So we'll see.
Well, I'm Canadian, so I cannot donate, but I will let you get to the other guy's questions. And thanks very much for.
Nope, but you can call up your friends who are American and get them to donate.
Yeah. Oh no, I already have. Trust me, I've trying to do as
right,
much
thanks
as I
a lot.
Can. Cheers. Have a good
thanks
day.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Next up is Eric in New York.
Hello, Peter.
Eric. Yes.
Okay. I have two questions. One is about China. One is about housing. I'll go with the China question first. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, I called into your show and I spoke to your California employees there, the ones who run the California office. You were busy,
uh-huh.
And I asked them about a possible bubble brewing in China because of credit expansion on the part of the Chinese government, and they told me that. Accordingly, malinvestments and everything that goes, all the bad things that go along with government credit expansion. And they responded that China retooled its factories and that actually, if I understood correctly, that it wasn't credit expansion, but that China spent down its reserves. And
I mean, obviously, credit is expanding in China. They are expanding their money supply quite rapidly, but they are backing their money supply with dollars. Now, obviously, what are those dollars going to be worth? That's my problem. But, you know, it's not the same thing. When we expand our money supply, we back it by nothing. Okay, they expand their money supply and back it by dollars. So, but they ultimately can go out and buy things at, you know, gold, silver, oil, commodities. They could do something. They're not going to get back 100, you know, RMB on the dollar, whatever the denominations are. But, yes, money supply growth is too rapid in China. It is creating malinvestments. It is creating problems in the economy. My point is that the positives in the Chinese economy outweigh those negatives. It would be better for the Chinese economy if the government was not doing this, if the government was not buying up dollars and buying up treasuries and not rapidly expanding its money supply. If instead China allowed current prices to fall, if they allowed domestic deflation, they would be in better shape. Their economy would be growing faster. Their people would be enjoying a higher standard of living. But the fact of the matter is the good outweighs the bad. And I think that the good things in China will continue for a long time, and the bad things are not going to continue that much longer. I think the Chinese government is going to come to its senses and act more responsibly before we get any major type of bubbles inflated in the Chinese economy. If I'm wrong, then at some point we might take profits on our Chinese stocks if I think that there is a real bubble in the Chinese stock market. But right now, based on the Chinese stocks that we own and the valuations there, I don't see a bubble. I mean, some of the stocks, most of the stocks are not nearly as cheap as they were a year ago, and some of them are expensive at this point, I think. But the majority of the stocks that we own in China, I still think are fairly valued or undervalued. They do not reflect bubble valuations by any sense. So I still think it's okay, advisable to invest there and invest in that whole region, investing in Southeast Asia, investing in countries, you know, Singapore and Japan. You know, I think there's a lot of opportunities there. They could turn into a full-fledged bubble if the Chinese persist with these policies, but it's my bet that they won't.
Okay, I definitely agree with you over the mid and longer term. I just wonder about in the short term. You know, I've heard stories that there's an entire city in China that was built by government stimulus package money, and it's a ghost town. It's a complete ghost town.
Yeah, but you know what? But here's the difference. You see, in America, when we built these McMansions, we did it with borrowed money. If China hadn't built that city, they would just have more dollars piling up in a safe somewhere. So even though there's nobody living in that city right now, they're better off with that city than with all those extra dollars they would have had if they didn't build it.
But so, that would be a malinvestment.
But it's not as bad a malinvestment as dollars.
Okay.
And at some point people will live there. It is an asset. Just like all the houses that we built still have value. They have a positive worth because somebody could live there. They can provide shelter. It, you know, it wasn't the best use of our resources, but they do have a positive value. So it would have been better had China not built that city, but building that city is better than holding the dollars and doing nothing with them. But, you know, at some point they're going to stop this. You know, as I said, it is not perfect. But if you look beneath the surface, or not even that far beneath, I mean, just look on the surface, a lot of stuff is going right in China. You know, they are industrializing, they are saving, they are investing, they are building up their infrastructure, they are building up their manufacturing base. A real industrial economy, a market-based capitalist economy is blossoming, even though the government is doing some foolish things. Now, compare that to America. Our government is doing much more foolish things with borrowed money, and our industrial economy is disintegrating.
I agree
with
you.
We're going in the wrong direction.
What do you say about the retooling? You know, do you think that, you know, your guys compared it to after World War II,
that hasn't happened yet. That is what is going to happen. People say, well, how is China going to survive when we're too broke to buy their products? And I say, well, they're going to sell their products to themselves. And in some cases, they will have to retool some of their manufacturing capacity to produce goods that are in demand in China rather than the goods that are in demand in America. And that's exactly what we did at the end of the Second World War when factories retooled from wartime production to peacetime production. And,
right,
you know, we had an economic boom. You know, we fired 10 million soldiers. You know, they weren't unemployed. They quickly got other jobs that didn't exist while they were fighting a war.
So you're saying they will retool, but you don't think they've done it yet.
They've done some of it, but they're still exporting a lot of their production to America that we can't afford to pay for.
Right.
So
when the
dollar collapses, now of course when other currencies will rise, so that China will still export. They'll export some of their stuff to other countries that can afford to pay with real production. But a lot more of the Chinese products will stay in China. But anyway, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay. Hey, you know, before I take the next call, I wanted to mention the other bill that was stuck into the health care bill was a new student loan program, a complete disaster. Now, everybody knows that I am a big critic of government guaranteed student loans, right? The reason that college tuition is so expensive is because government has guaranteed loans to make it to borrow money to pay whatever inflated prices universities want to charge. If students didn't have access to those government guarantees, college prices would be falling so that students can afford to go, as opposed to rising because they have Uncle Sam's pocketbook to pick. But what did the government do? What did Barack Obama now do? He has abolished the guaranteed student loan program, right? So there are going to be no more banks, issuing government guaranteed student loans, right? That would be a great thing, except what we're going to get instead is even worse. Now what's going to happen is the government is going to loan directly to students to go to college. Now, of course, first thing is the government doesn't have any money to loan, right? The government is in debt. The government is trillions in debt. We're running a $1.5 trillion deficit right now. How is the government going to loan anybody money to go to college when the government is broke? So obviously, whatever money the government loans to a college student, the government's going to have to borrow it. And of course, who has to pay it back? Well, the same college student when he graduates, if he could get a job. But that's number one. But number two is that when the government did this, now the whole thing is completely politicized. And if the first thing the government has done is they said that when the banks were doing the student loans, the interest was capped at 15% of your income. Well, now they're going to lower that to 10% of your income. Under the old system, after 25 years, if there was any balance that was unpaid, it was forgiven. And, of course, the taxpayer simply picked it up, right? Now, under the new rules, it's forgiven in 20 years. But what does this actually mean in practice? It means that if you borrow money to go to school, now you don't have to pay as much of it back as you did under the old system. Well, what does that mean? If you can borrow money but not have to pay it all back, well, you're willing to borrow even more money, right? Obviously, I mean, if I didn't have to pay any of it back, well, then people would be borrowing millions or billions, right? There's no limit. But under this system, basically, it might mean that a student that borrows $100,000 under the new system might have to pay back the same amount of money that somebody would have to pay back who borrowed $70,000 under the old system. And so what that means is that students doing the math will be more willing to assume larger loans when they know that they have less amounts to pay back. Well, the colleges can do the same math. And now they know, well, we can raise our prices even faster now because there will be even less resistance on the part of students to paying these higher prices because they can simply borrow the money from the government, not having to pay it all back. And, of course, so now what we're going to have is that college tuitions that were rising rapidly because of government-guaranteed student loans are now going to rise even more rapidly because of government-provided student loans. Now, what is the next thing the government's going to do? As tuitions rise even faster, there's going to be pressure on the government to say, well, we'll forgive the loans in 15 years. We'll forgive the loans in 10 years. Or, well, we'll cap it at 8% of your income or 5% of your income or something like that. And And all that's going to do is feed the rally even more, you know, just like they did with Fannie and Freddie. You know, Fannie and Freddie were guaranteeing mortgages, so housing prices kept rising. But every time they got to the limit of what Fannie and Freddie would insure, they raised the limit so that the prices could keep going up. But, of course, it was because the limits were being raised, they were pulling the prices up. So this is going to escalate the education crisis of runaway prices, I think, to the point that they ultimately try to make education and entitlement, which is probably what these guys want. They probably want everybody in America to go to college for free on the government, on the taxpayer. And, of course, then it's really going to cost us a lot, even more money to educate our kids. And, of course, they won't even get educated. They'll just be indoctrinated. They'll be they'll be in school learning nothing, and they'll graduate with no employment opportunities because all of the resources that would have been needed to grow the economy would have been squandered on education. And not real education. I mean, when you say we're wasting money on education, people like to say, well, aren't you in favor of education? Yeah, I just don't want to overpay for it, right? I like education. I don't like paying $1,000 for $100 worth of education, right? In Washington, if you're against spending, then you're against education, which is all nonsense. You have to understand that we don't get better education. We just get more expensive education. And we're about to get the most expensive education in the world based on this crazy policy. And, of course, Barack Obama is going to say he actually had the gall to say that this is going to save money. This is going to save taxpayers' money. Now, how does Barack Obama think it's going to save money? Because he's taking the profit out of it. He's saying that the banks were earning a profit. And by socializing it and getting rid of the profits, it's going to be more efficient and will save money. Well, wait a minute. I mean, the profits make it inefficient? Well, if that's true with student loans, that's true with everything, right? He's anti-profits. Well, how is that different than Karl Marx, right? That's the whole theory behind socialism. Take the profit out. The capitalist, the businessman, is sucking the life out of the economy, out of the workers, that profits are evil, that profits come at the expense of everybody else. I got news for Barack Obama. Take the profits out, and you take the efficiency out. Take the profits out, and prices rise even faster. It's profits. It's free market competition that keeps prices low. It's government monopolies. It's government bureaucracy. It's when you take the profit out and you put the bureaucracy in. That's when you get runaway prices. That's what these socialists in Washington don't understand. So this is not going to save the taxpayer money. This is going to cost the taxpayer a fortune. But that's typical for Washington. And, of course, they stuck this into the health care bill. What does this have to do with the health care bill? Absolutely nothing. But they crammed it in there anyway, right? No debate, no nothing. Shove it in there, and it gets passed. Look, that's what's wrong with this country. That's what's wrong with Washington. That's why I'm running for the United States Senate. Just on the shot, on the one in a million, whatever it is, that I can actually do something to put an end to this before they put an end to the country. Anyway, next caller on hold is Chris in Illinois. Hey, Chris.
How you doing, Peter?
Good. How are you?
Yeah. All right. I just wanted to piggyback off the first caller. I actually work for one of the U.S. senators, and I was actually able to attend the CFTC meeting. Mm-hmm. And from my note-taking, it seems as though two of the the chair and one of the commissioners out of the five were pretty much willing to admit that there's anywhere between a 23 and 40% short position in the COMEX market. Short of paper. In fact, it even got to the point where they alluded to the fact that 25 years worth of silver paper, obviously holding it short, had been sold short. Mm-hmm. Now, this being the case, they're suggesting that they put position limits on this short. And I am not one to be a conspiracy theorist either, but I don't know how closely you follow this, but on February 3rd, there was a whistleblower who called up the CFTC and told them exactly what would happen on February 5th after the non-farm payroll numbers. Gold shot up $89, and then it hit down $25. He was from Goldman Sachs, and all his buddies were talking, making all this money, laughing, and he decided to be an honest guy and come out and tell the CFTC exactly what was going to happen. So you have one whistleblower out there already talking about the manipulation. But my question is, if you have 23 to 40% short interest, which was pretty much decided on, and it's two banks, it's J.P. Morgan and HSBC. Would you be in favor of position limits interfering with a market first. And secondly,
well, no, I mean, I think, look, the COMEX has a right. I mean, the COMEX is a private exchange. You know, they have a right to put position limits on, particularly on speculators, on hedgers, on bona fide hedgers. There's no reason to have position limits. But the exchanges have to control their risks. And they have to control, you know, and obviously if there's a huge speculative position on one side of the market, there's always a chance that losses can be enormous and that they might not be able to cover it. So, yeah, I mean, the government doesn't have to require it. But, you know, the market should enforce it. Because remember, if you're on the long side of a trade and you see a certain company with a huge short position, you might have to wonder, what is the counterparty risk? Do I really want to trade on this exchange? And, you know, there are other exchanges. I mean, you might, you know, there are exchanges. You can trade in Singapore. You can trade in London. You can trade in Hong Kong. So I think that free market competition among exchanges, the exchanges will want to regulate and put their own position limits on to show that their exchanges are solvent, that they might not go. Because what good is it if you want to make a big bet on an increase in the price of gold and you want to do it through a futures contract, you want to make sure that, you know, that exchange is going to be able to cover your winnings in the event that you win. And so one thing that would make you question that ability would be, you know, huge positions on the other side by companies that might not have capital adequate to meet their margin calls. So it isn't something that government shouldn't get involved. Now, here would be the problem. If one of these entities failed and the government says, well, they're too big to fail, and then the government bails it out, you see, then the government should put regulations on if the government's going to bail them out if they fail. Now, it's, you know, Mark, two wrongs make a right. I don't think the government should bail anybody out if they fail, which means the government shouldn't be doing this. But if the government is going to bail out financial institutions that fail, then the government should impose regulations, because what happens is when people perceive that the governments will bail them out, then they don't worry about the counterparty risk. They figure, who cares, because the government's there. So that's the government-created moral hazard. If there is no moral hazard, then the market will police this. It's only when the government interferes that everybody lets down their guard.
Understood.
All right. Anyway, well, thanks for the call.
I appreciate it, Peter.
Next up is Herman in New York.
Herman, go ahead. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hey, what's going on, Peter? I'm a really big fan. I just have two questions and I guess a comment. My first question is, how did the world get in so much debt? Like, where did all of this global debt come from Greece to the United States to UK? Like, how did the world get this way?
Well, remember, it's not the world, right? Because for everybody that's borrowing, somebody is lending. A good chunk of the world is in debt. And another good chunk of the world is in surplus, right? Our liabilities are somebody else's assets. So you've got the Western world in debt. You've got developed nations like the United States, like the UK. You've got these emerging economies like China, India, you know, that have been saving money. And so what happened is we borrowed from them and we accumulated these assets. And a lot of it was because of governments. You know, governments got bigger and bigger and bigger. They wanted to promise all sorts of things so that they can keep getting elected, but they didn't want to tax their constituents and risk not being reelected for raising taxes, so they started borrowing money. And there was so much savings going on in other nations that they were able to borrow from other countries. And so that's the problem. And I think the root cause of these massive global economic imbalances has been the U.S. dollar being the world reserve currency. If the dollar wasn't the reserve currency, if we were still on a gold standard, for example, then these big global imbalances never could have come into existence, and you wouldn't have countries such as the United States that are so massively indebted.
Okay.
But, you know, we've there are all kinds of other reasons. Our country, our tax code, I mean, our Federal Reserve, everything our government does encourages us to spend. Of course, other countries, like, you know, whatever they do, they encourage their citizens to save. I mean, that's what China's doing. Unfortunately for the Chinese, they're saving a lot of their money in dollars, and so they're going to get screwed. But anyway, absolutely, they're not going to do that much longer.
Absolutely. And that segues actually into my second question, which is pretty much, how long will it take once the dollar collapses for the world economy to kind of restructure and get used to a new engine of the world?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not being number one anymore.
Yeah, I don't know how long it will take. A lot of it depends on what governments do in reaction to it. If governments put barriers and roadblocks to slow it all down, then it will take longer. If governments stay out and allow markets to reallocate resources as quickly as possible, I don't think it will take long at all. You know, it could take a year, it could take 2 years, but in the scheme of things, it will be very quick. But if the governments interfere, they could drag it out for a decade or more. You know, that's the problem when governments don't let markets function. Ultimately, the markets are going to win out over governments. But governments can slow down the progress, and in so doing, they exacerbate the pain of the transition. Anyway,
absolutely.
Thanks for the call.
And last point was that the last three auctions by the Treasury have been very, very suspect, and everything you're saying that you were saying before is coming to pass. Thank you.
Sure, yeah. You know, interest rates have been rising. They haven't spiked up in a spectacular fashion yet, but I think they will. The dollar is still enjoying a flight to quality, in quotes, bid from the focus on European problems. Again, I don't think this will last much longer, and I think the world will once again refocus on the larger problems looming here in the United States. Anyway, we've only got about 12 minutes left, so I've got three people are on hold still. So I'm going to try to take these last calls, but let's take no more new calls. Jeremy in Florida, you're on.
Hey, Peter, how you doing? Nice to talk to you again.
Nice to call
it. I just had a quick question and a quick comment and a question, and having to do with our economic freedoms in the country and kind of something that's been scaring me on a lot of things I've been reading. First, my comment is I have a small self-directed brokerage account through one of the major banks. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but which bank it is. But in there I have some small investments with some ETFs and different metals and agriculture and things like that. And I got a letter in the mail instructing me that as of April 1st, I will no longer be able to purchase shares of these specific funds. So I went ahead and I called up customer service, and the guy on the customer service told me that they had taken upon themselves to decide that I was not educated enough to be trading in these types of ETFs.
Yeah, you know, I don't doubt that, because what's happening in the securities industry is governments continue to impose more and more restrictions on brokerage firms because what happens is people lose money and then they sue, right? We're very litigious, and it's very easy now to sue your broker. And so probably what's happening is a lot of these brokerage firms, when clients invest in something kind of exotic or foreign and then they lose money, they file a lawsuit and they say, hey, this wasn't appropriate. You shouldn't have let me do this. You had a duty to stop me. I'm suing you. And so what happens is, to protect themselves, the firms start limiting the things that you can do because they're trying to protect themselves from being sued. Now, of course, if you put your money in U.S. Treasury bonds and there's hyperinflation and you're wiped out and you're broke, you can't sue for that because there isn't a court in the world that's going to say that treasuries are risky. But if you put your money in some foreign stock fund, or you put your money, you know, in gold, and then you lose your money, they go, everybody knows how risky that stuff is. Oh, yeah, you never should have let this person, buy that risky thing. So that is the problem. It's litigation. It's fear of litigation that limits your ability to do things. Just like, you can see, I mean, why don't public swimming pools have diving boards? They used to all have diving boards. Now none of them do. Well, because people would get hurt and they would sue. So what do they do? To avoid the lawsuits, they rip out the diving boards. I mean, so, you know, the whole country is impacted. Everybody's choices are limited because of the litigious nature of our society, which is a real shame.
Absolutely. And real quick, I missed the beginning of your show, so I hope you didn't touch on this already, but the jobs bill that was passed, I read online that there was this nifty little change to the tax code they put in there that, if I understand it correctly, would hit all foreign investments with a 30% tax on it.
I did hit on that in the show. And that is if you have a foreign account, a foreign bank account or a foreign brokerage firm, whenever you withdraw money, they have to send 30% of your withdrawal to the IRS. Now, you might be able to get it back, but it's kind of a way to make sure that you're paying taxes on whatever gains you might have had offshore. So, but yeah, this is the first step. This is capital controls. It is going to get worse from here. I'm certain of that. And that's why I say people got to act. People got to get their money out of the dollar. They got to buy the foreign assets they want now before the government makes it illegal or completely expensive to do it with fines and taxes and everything. Anyway, well, thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you, Peter.
Okay. Next up is Stacy in California.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
My question is, first of all, with goldmoney.com and like the Perth Mint, will that legislation you just talked about apply to that too?
I don't think so, because the way I read it, it's financial institutions. And, you know, the Perth Mint is a mint. It's not a financial institution. They're simply a storage facility storing your gold. As far as I can tell, that's no different than them storing furniture for you.
Okay.
They're storing your property. But at some point in time, they might pass a law, that would include that. But from what I can read now, so far they haven't gotten to that.
And then I own some gold and silver with goldmoney.com, and I was wondering with your new precious metals department if you guys will have an account with them, so if I wanted to, I could transfer money to you guys in the gold grams and then have physical delivery of some coin. Have you guys thought about that?
I don't know. That's an interesting idea. I'll bring it up to the guy that's running that for me. And, yeah, I mean, maybe we should be able to do that to the extent that we can have people who have grams of gold, if we can have it transferred in, and then use that to give you actual gold for delivery. Yeah, that's a good idea. So thanks for mentioning it.
Yeah, because I have some physical gold or silver, actually, but I like the idea of having it somewhere else. But then I thought, well, maybe if I need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we are going to be able to do that for the Perth Mint. So people who have Perth Mint certificates who want to take delivery will be able to take delivery through this new company, and it will be a lot less expensive. Right now, you know, it is kind of expensive to take delivery from the Perth Mint. It's very inexpensive to buy and sell if you don't want delivery. But the minute you want delivery, to have it delivered all the way from Australia, the shipping is really expensive. But what you'll be able to do with the new company is you'll be able to cash it in, and then I can deliver from my facility in New York, and it's so much cheaper. So
Right. It's
going to be a lot easier for people who have the Perth Mint certificates, to the extent that they want some physical delivery, to have it done through the Euro Pacific Precious Metals and save a lot of money. So, yeah, and so we might as well include gold money. Thanks
for the call. Yeah, because also I think that the gold money, you can get some delivery, but in really larger forms, I might want a smaller amount. So.
Yeah, we'll be able to deliver, you know, a single coin at a time. So.
Right.
All right.
Okay, then my last question, what do you think about Ron Paul's legislation? Is there any chance we'll get through on reducing the capital gains tax on the metals?
Yeah, he wants to eliminate it, and I doubt it'll get through, but I am 100% in favor of it. I mean, the government hates it. See,
that's
the problem is there should be no tax on gold. There should be no tax on foreign exchange, because what happens is, let's say you have 100 ounces of gold because you don't want to save in dollars, and then 6 months from now you go out and buy something with it. Well, what if that gold depreciates by 20% between the time you saved it and the time you spent it? The government wants you to calculate the gain and pay an ordinary income tax on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the gold, it's still the same gold. It's the same 100 ounces. What they're really taxing you on is the depreciation in the value of the dollar that you didn't own.
Right.
And it's not fair, and it makes it difficult to have to really exchange in gold. So if we abolished all capital gains treatment on gold, then gold would compete with dollars as money in our economy. And it would force the Federal Reserve to be more responsible, because if they were irresponsible, more people would turn to gold. But
right.
I think it's a great legislation, and so the chance is zero. But if I get to the Senate, you better believe I'll be supporting that bill if I can in the United States Senate. So anyway, thanks for the call. The next, last caller of the night is Jennifer in California. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a really quick question. We've been excellent at saving, investing our money in gold. I know, and I believe, that a currency crisis is coming, and so a part of me wants to go ahead and start buying stuff, get back and devalue dollars, but you hear from a lot of people two things. Some people say, oh my gosh, totally get out of debt. There's another school of philosophy out there that says if we do hit a currency crisis, the government could reevaluate the currency in favor of the lender instead of the borrower. I wanted to know what your take on all that was.
Well, what you're saying is, should you go out and borrow money to buy things like a house, because you can pay it back.
We have the money to pay it all back.
Well, if we have runaway inflation, given the fact that you probably still have to make a down payment on that house, you're probably still better off buying gold without the leverage than buying the leveraged property. But if you can buy a house with zero down or 3% down with an FHA mortgage and get a fixed rate mortgage for 30 years at a low rate, yeah, you know, especially if you can get a good deal on the house, if you buy it through a near foreclosure or a bank short sale or something, yeah, I mean, you could do that. I would not get an adjustable rate mortgage, get a fixed rate mortgage. But, you know, I wouldn't go out and borrow money and buy a car and get too levered up, especially, you know, and make a huge levered bet on massive inflation, because the government could decide to do the right thing. Rates could go through the roof instead, and then prices fall, and then you're caught in a bind. So I think you want to, you know, you don't want to be too levered in one direction. But yeah, what you're saying is probably going to happen. There is going to be a lot of inflation, and it is going to wipe out debts, which unfortunately wipes out assets. So that's what most of my clients are worried about. That they're worried about debts being wiped out because they represent the other side of the debt. If you have money in bonds, you know, when debt gets wiped out, your bonds are wiped out. You know, your U.S. savings bonds are wiped out. Your muni bonds are wiped out. The cash value of your insurance policies is wiped out. Your annuities are wiped out. Your pension benefits are wiped out. So people that, you know, when we talk about, you know, helping the borrowers, you know, what we're doing is we're transferring the wealth away from the lenders and the savers and the investors. And that, you know, that is the real threat.
So the second part of my question is that we're actually thinking about building a house. And my question is during a crisis, you know, how would that play out?
To me, look, I don't know about where you live, but where I live, houses are selling for less than the cost to build them. So I don't know why somebody would build a house from scratch today and take all that cost of all the material when there are so many houses on the market that, you know, you can buy for less than it would cost you to build. So I would be looking at that. I think if you're building a house, you're wasting money right now.
Well, it's not even with carrying
anyway,
costs.
Look, I got to rush. We're in the last minute, so I really can't take the second part of your call. Feel free to call again next week, though.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks for listening, Jennifer. All right, anyway, the hour does go by quickly at Wall Street Unspun. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, you know, pick up a copy of Crash Proof 2.0 if you don't already have one. Get ready next week on my site to order your copy of How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. We still have a few hours left for those last-minute Schiffer Senate donations at SchifferSenate.com. And don't forget, 800-727-7922 to talk to a Euro-Pacific Capital broker. Get your money out of dollars, accumulate foreign assets before the exchange controls really clamp down and it's illegal to do it. Anyway, take care, everybody. I'll be back again next week. This is Peter Schiff, Wall Street Unspun. Good night.